Hi, welcome to View of Politics podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation X veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barberena, and the View of Politics office millennial, Lauren Coronado. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Lauren. How are you doing?
I'm well. It's Monday.
It is Monday.
So, but
I'm kind of exhausted.
I bet. You left me all week last week.
Well, I will tell you, for good reason, I was lucky enough to score a ticket to the Democratic debate, the presidential Democratic debate that was held in Houston, Texas. Did you know it's really hot in Houston?
Oh, I know. I was watching everyone's like social media stories, waiting in line for the debate. I was like, yeah, all happy in my sweatpants, watching it in my very cold house with my puppy. Nice, it was a good
nice,
night.
Nice. Well, I just wanted to kind of share a little bit about that experience. So we were went up there to Houston and got there about, well, the doors were going to open at 4. So we got there about 3 o'clock to the university. And they, of course, had there was a lot of security. There was about a 4-block radius of security. So you couldn't drive up to the university to drop off. Yeah. So, I mean, it was high security where they had dump trucks and everything prevent, you know, a car from ramming with a God only knows what. But, and so as we were doing our 4-block my hike over to get to the university, we ran into none other than Rahm Emanuel. So we had a little sighting there as he was getting out of his vehicle to get through. He's the former mayor of Chicago and former chief of staff of President Obama. So he was there and looked pretty cool. And so it was like that was our first touch of seeing a famous person at the debate. And so so we finally got to where we were going, and it was about we got about 45 minutes before the gate opened, and it was hot. We're talking hot, Houston hot.
Yeah. So not just hot, like humid and gross.
Yeah, humid and gross. And, you know, and they asked people to dress up, obviously, because they want people to look good on camera. So people are there and, you know, kind of their Sunday best, suits, men in suits.
Dress type situation.
Yeah, it was not pretty. It was not a pretty sight. But in fact, as we were walking into the debate area, a young woman fainted. Like because of the heat, it was kind of crazy. And none other than Houston Police Chief Acevedo came to her rescue. It was interesting because I've seen the police chief. I follow him on Twitter, and there he was live. I was like, it's Chief Acevedo. Oh my gosh,
here to save the day.
Yeah, he was being a first responder, like the real thing, and it was kind of cool. And so
that's crazy. So she
fainted of just heat exhaustion.
It was the line that long.
Yeah, it was long and it was hot. So they took her out on a stretcher.
Tents.
Yeah. No, or something. They were giving out water in their defense. But then when we got, so then you finally got through security, which, you know, took about maybe 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, but you're still in the heat. And then you get to the building, and this building, it clearly had stairs at one point. And someone said, all right, we're going to make this ADA compliant. So let's just pour concrete and make it a ramp. So
yeah, I've been to the Texas Southern campus. I know what you're talking about.
So it was like a ramp that was the pitch of the ramp was a stairway, clearly.
Yeah.
But there weren't stairs. So I felt
like
I was hiking.
Absurdly steep.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like climbing, you know, Mount Everest. It's like, we're getting to the top of the mountain. Anyway, so we finally get to the top, and the tickets, of course, are electronic, right? So you've got your little code, and you show your phone.
Show your email.
Yeah, show your email with the little code, and they swiped it, and that went pretty quickly. And then they, in exchange, you got a ticket, right? So they gave us a blue ticket. Apparently, the different ticket colors are the different levels. Ours was a blue ticket. And as we got in, we sort of end up into this little bottleneck area. And I immediately realized it was not going to be a smooth entrance into sitting down. And I was having what we call in the biz PTSD from Purple Ticket. And the Purple Ticket, and I think I shared this with you off of the podcast when I got back, is that during Obama's first inauguration, there was a group of us that had Purple Tickets. And the Purple Ticket was the nightmare ticket because you never got into the inauguration.
It's like general admission.
Oh, it was
the purple blue ticket.
No, well, the Purple Ticket was supposed to be for Obama staffers, but they never opened that security gate. So we were literally trapped, quite frankly. There were some people that were trapped in a tunnel. We didn't quite make it in the tunnel. We were just outside the tunnel, but it was nonetheless the most horrid experience. I never thought I was going to die before. And that day, I seriously thought I was going to die. Like, there was no cell service. It was the most horrible experience in my life trying to get in to see Obama's inauguration. And so we always call that the purple ticket, you know, fiasco. Yeah. And so as I was standing there trying to find my seat with my blue ticket, I was like, no, no, it's blue. It's not purple. It's not purple. So, but anyways, after a bit of kind of standing around and being squished, they finally kind of opened up the area. So we got to sit down and we got to watch the debate live, which is something I've never had an opportunity to do. And I was really glad I had the chance to do it. So shout out to my friends over there at the DNC that hooked me up with the ticket. So thank you very much. And it was quite a lovely evening. Although my one complaint is that I couldn't buy M&Ms because he had to sit there without any food for a few hours.
Oh, no.
So that was a little rough, but we drank water and we held it out. So it was really cool to watch the debates. But then, you know, when I got back, I started wondering, like, is this like something that us geeks in, you know, in politics watch these debates? Like, do real voters watch the debates?
This year was the first time that I've actually watched and kept up with the Democratic debates. Last year, I had watched one of the Republican primary debates just like I guess I should know what's happening in the world. But yeah, so.
Yeah, so yeah, I just started wondering, like, are these things, you know, that it just like older voters, I mean, do debates matter? We always ask, you know, do these debates matter? And is it really about the debates? It's really more about the media coverage of the debates, right? So like post this debate,
get your sound clip kind of thing, which is I think why I don't prefer to watch them, because you don't learn anything. You just spend 2 hours on a weeknight that I could have, you know, been watching one of my shows that I do like.
Right.
On a night when I have time to watch TV, and instead I'm just watching sound clips of, you know, things I've already seen on social media.
Yeah, well, and I think part of the problem is because at this point in the stage, there's so many candidates that their ability to respond is like you get a minute and a half. And
it doesn't even feel like a minute and a half by the time they...
Or not even a minute and a half. Sometimes it's like 45 seconds.
It's 45 seconds.
Yeah, in this case, it was 40. They get like a minute and 15 minutes to do their intro, and then they get 45 seconds to answer, and then they get to do some rebuttals. But, you know, it's just difficult to really get into the meat of policy. So it really becomes about how are you going to capture your media moment and how are you going to capture the attention of the media.
Plus, most people honestly don't care about your like nitty gritty policy stuff.
Yeah.
So,
well,
are you wasting your time if you just go up there and start talking about your platform?
That's a good question. I mean, I think so many of them right now are trying to just find their media moment that it becomes less about policy and more about how do you get the media to pay attention to you. Yeah. And then really realistically, you know, all the memes and the tweets that come out of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see that as the presidential debates are going on, their campaigns are actually live tweeting, right? They're like repeating what they're saying on Twitter and hoping that it'll get
some
traction.
I've been that person live tweeting.
Yeah. Or you just sort of like retweet
stuff. Someone retweet this.
But of course, one of my, you know, kind of my takeaway after I was leaving is I was looking at the audience. It was great. You know, I saw a lot of friends, a lot of people in the business that have been in politics for a long time while we were there live. I started thinking, well, you know, how many is this, you know, really reaching young people? Because we're talking about the presidential elections and there's a lot of talk about how young people are going to be a big part of the electorate and where are they going and what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. And so part of, you know, watching some of the coverage of the debates, I just turned the TV on, and lo and behold, there was the editor-in-chief of Cosmo Magazine.
Cosmopolitan Magazine,
which is the go-to for, well, it used to be in the old days. I don't know if it still is anymore. Like, I don't think it is anymore. But needless to say, they did a poll of their readers. And apparently their readers, they consider their readers to be Generation Zs, millennials and Generation Zs.
Yeah.
And so I thought, oh man, I'm really going to pay attention to hear.
And they do have a large readership though.
Yeah. And of course they have their online publication now. So yes. They have the magazine. For me, when I think of Cosmo, really, for me, it's like, I'm going to go lay outside of the pool and read Cosmo. Like that's like, to me, like when I read Cosmo, when I'm at the pool, like I don't
Teen
like
Vogue,
just,
Cosmo.
I don't read it like what I'm going to read, like Newsweek or part of my morning routine. It's just Cosmo's what you pick up when you're headed out to the pool. But so I think it was interesting that the editor-in-chief started talking about, you know, their readership.
The demographic that they specifically serve. Yeah.
And what they thought about the debates. So interestingly enough,
I saw it too after you talked about it, and I wasn't able to find, like, I guess, a report of the poll. So I don't know how the poll was conducted, if it was like phone calls or if it was just like an online survey that they posted on social media. But they found some interesting things.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to seeing, because hopefully that will come out. Today was just like
I think it had just happened because the video was posted this morning, yesterday.
Yeah. But surprisingly enough, I kind of figured, all right, young women in Cosmo, that maybe perhaps they would be gravitated toward one of the female candidates. But surprisingly enough, they weren't. No, like
Warner Harris stands there.
No, or even Amy. No Amy either. It was all about Sanders. Apparently Bernie Sanders
came out ahead of even Biden and compared to national polls.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And even more interesting is that according to their poll, that 54% found the debates to be helpful.
Unhelpful.
Correct. Thank you for correcting me. Mm-hmm. Unhelpful, which is a majority of them basically said this is not.
It's pointless.
It's not worth my time. And I think part of it is because they're trying to cover so many topics in short a period of time that it's really hard for them to get into.
No one can ever talk about anything because you get a minute. Probably minute average between the 45 seconds and the minute and a half to answer the question. And you can't say anything substantive by the time you like lay down, because you always have to relate it back to like a personal story of like, remember Joe the plumber? Well, you have to talk about him. And by the time you get through that story and into the policy part of your answer, your time is up.
Right. Well, I thought it was interesting because it also said that 72% lose confidence in a candidate when they repeat canned one-liners.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's probably because they feel it's rehearsed and it's not authentic.
You can tell.
Yeah.
Like, so tell.
Like, I wrote the damn bill. It's like, how many times did he say, I wrote the damn bill?
Adios, Trump.
Yeah, adios, Trump. I wrote the damn bill. Like,
and they're good, though.
Yeah, they're great one-liners, but, you know, they just find them to be, like, now you're starting to be, you're getting into a performance rather than.
Yes, for sure. You're setting it up for your shop after the debate to open the t-shirt link.
Yeah, and actually that's kind of true now, where the sort of that kitschy line that comes out of the debate, like, ends up being
really
the t-shirt.
Emphasizes that it was planned because the t-shirt link was just ready.
Right. But the other thing was that this to me was shocking. Shocking that this is in Cosmo. That 53% aren't able to use the debates to make decisions.
Because you don't learn anything from the debate.
Isn't that funny? That's just so weird to me. Like, you know, I mean, for me, it's like I get to see them all on stage. And interestingly enough, it's like, you know, this last debate, looking at all those 10 candidates up there, I thought, wow, I see the cabinet, right? You can see the Secretary
for
of Education.
Sure. You're picking out positions for everyone up there. I do that too.
Yeah, I was already picking out who was going to be doing what. But it was just so interesting. And, you know, and there's a few more statistics I want to go over, but I just want to jump real quick. So, of course, you know, when we're preparing for this, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go to Cosmo Magazine online and just check it out. So I thought this was really funny. They have this thing and it's like, your cheat sheet to the 2020 Democratic presidential campaigns, right? So I love this, right? Like, you know, or the 10 things you should not be doing in the bedroom.
The list.
Right? You know, list the list, writing. Right? The list stuff, which I really love about Cosmo. It's like my favorite thing, right? And also the celebrity gossip. But so according to this, it's got this like this presidential cheat sheet. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was done when it was like all the candidates. But I thought it was really interesting because, you know, typically when we think about a voter guide, right, it's sort of like, this is your policy position, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So this is, and I'm going to read a couple just because I think they're so incredibly interesting. So first it starts off with their name. So in this case, I'm just start off, this is just because I'm going alphabetical and I'm going down. No preference here. But so the first says Joe Biden has their age, 76. And then it says resume. And under his resume, it says Obama's vice president. And before that, a U.S. senator from Delaware for eons.
Okay. For eons. Oh, no.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of funny. And then it says his big idea, right? So I guess these are like the, you know, like the, like the hitters, right? His big idea. To take back the soul of our nation! Exclamation point.
Then it kind of goes. What does that even mean?
I know, and specifically, he wants to rebuild the middle class through tax reform, free public college for everyone, an increased minimum wage, and more protections for workers, including pay transparency. Then it says on other issues, and they talk about while pro-choice, he repeatedly voted for the Hyde Amendment and talks a little bit more about that. And then his brush with controversy. So I think this is interesting. So they take every candidate, so they kind of give them their resume, what they stand for, what their big ideas, and then their brush with controversy, which I think is kind of interesting, right? Because just the notion that you're like looking at the controversy of this particular candidate already made to me like smells of cynicism, mm-hmm. right? So then this is his brush with controversy is Biden has been criticized for his handling of Anita Hill's testimony during the Clarence Thomas Supreme Court confirmation in 1991. He presided over the committee. So that's kind of his.
I think that's fair. Yes, and he acknowledged that. So.
Yeah. And then he is also come under fire for his, quote, awkward or, quote, creepy interactions with women. He responded by saying he'll be more cognizant of others' personal space. And so then there's like one other one. And then personal detail.
Can we go back to the eons? He was elected in 1973.
Yeah, the first time.
My mom was two. That is eons.
So, and then it has, it's the next one, the personal detail we're here for, which is interesting. So it says he loves ice cream so much more that he has a flavor named after him because it's Cosmo. You got to have some obscure fact. But then this was my favorite thing about the Cosmo voter guide is it says best tweet. So apparently they go through and look at the candidates and they determine what their best tweet is. And in Biden's case, his best tweet is the Obama-Biden BFF selfie he posted last year in honor of the former president's birthday. And then they actually have a picture of the tweet. Mm-hmm. So then they go through. So I'm just going to read a couple more just in all fairness so we get to some others real quickly. But I'll try to get these done fast. But so Cory Booker, age 50, resume, U.S. Senator, his big idea. Most notable policy proposal deals with gun reform. Brush with controversy. He's been criticized for accepting campaign finance from Wall Street. Dun, dun, dun. Then we got some charter school stuff here. Personal detail we're here for. His potential first lady. He's been dating Rosario Dawson since December 2018.
So that's Josie and the Pussycats.
Yes, isn't that? So this is great personal detail. I mean, what other voter guide would tell you this kind of cool stuff? And then his best tweet. The many, many times he posted about breaking up with sleep for coffee, we can relate. So he's got his little tweet here. So I think that's interesting. And then let me read. There's, should we do Pete Buttigieg?
No, read Harris's.
Let me get to Harris, de Blasio. Oh, good. This has still got some old ones on here, so I'm going to get to Harris. Here we go. Kamala Harris, 54. Her resume, U.S. Senator from California, former Attorney General of California and District Attorney of San Francisco. Her big idea, while it's the norm to hear candidates talk about tax reform and climate change, Harris has focused her platform on something else, giving teachers a $13,500 salary bump in hopes of closing the teacher pay gap. Just kind of interesting because I don't really hear talking about that too much. Brush with controversy.
Such a specific number.
I know. Brush with controversy. Harris' previous tenure as California Attorney General has been scrutinized by critics who say she was tough on crime. Record doesn't allow with her image of criminal justice reform. And her best tweet is the time she defended AOC's dancing video with a gif of some of her own moves. So apparently that was her best.
So are these
tweet.
Most liked tweets, or is there something the editors were like?
I don't know. I think it's just like, I don't know. But these are actually the tweet part. If you get to Cosmo and look at this voter guy, I think it's great. And Beto's best tweet was, it was actually a tweet about him. O'Rourke was captured on film skateboarding at the Whataburger parking lot.
Oh, I remember that.
So that's considered. and then let me just get to Julian's, because I think Julian's best tweet is interesting. So according to them, Julian's best tweet is when he joked that his doppelganger was The Rock. So apparently that's an interesting, but I just, you know, but it's so funny because, you know, when we work with candidates and we're working on voter guides, it's like we spend all this time like trying to find that exact perfect word of like what's going to be in, like we want to make sure that that reader is fully informed. And I just think it's interesting that in, you know, in Cosmo, it's like, it's just like a totally different take. Yeah, it's.
I feel like. That's the stuff people care about more anyway, as that is. I think people are more likely to pay attention to something like that in a voter guide than paragraphs of policy that is just there.
paragraphs of policy. I just try to sound like a lyric from Hamilton. Yeah, definitely, definitely. But I think it just shows sort of the difference between, you know, what young voters are looking for versus what older voters are looking for. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, I'm going to go back to the results of the poll here, just because they actually asked questions about gun violence and mass shootings. So I just want to talk about that real quickly. Again, this is going back to the Cosmo poll. So it said that 74% say mass shootings are the single biggest concern regarding gun ownership, but which I can see that as being the case. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't have more context to this, so we don't know what other, you know, was this a multiple choice test, that we have other choices? You know, when I think about gun ownership, there's a whole variety of issues that could be concerning people regarding gun ownership. So we don't really have a sense of reference, but obviously, mass shooting is definitely on top of mind for the young people, or I should say readers of Cosmo.
So do you think that with this being such a large issue, that's almost 3/4 of the people that took this survey, do you think that we'll see more questions about gun ownership in the next debate? Or do you think, well, you were at the debate, how was the audience receptive to the questions on?
So the audience seemed actually very receptive to these issue, well, to the issue of sort of restricting guns and gun ownership. In fact, when Bethel said, we're going to take away your, you know, hell yeah, we're going to take away your AK-15s or AK-47s, that, you know, the crowd kind of erupted in a cheer. And keep in mind that there was a huge group of students there who, you know, were part of that attended the university, who were part of the audience as well. So a good chunk of the participants were young people. And so you did feel like the crowd was really cheering in that way.
So going back to people don't find the debates helpful, since there was that big moment about gun control, did you learn anything about the candidates' gun policy when they were speaking at the debate?
You know, I don't think we really did. I feel like...
Well, boo.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Beto coming out in that way was new for him. I mean, it certainly seemed like he was inching in that direction, but at the debate, he, you know, I guess so in that sense, yeah. I mean, I think prior to the debate, we didn't know that Bethel was about, you know, mandatory, you know, guns being mandatorily returned, or at least these semi-automatics or whatever type of guns that he was talking about. We didn't get into the policy specifics AR of what 15s and AK-47s, said, yeah. I don't even know the names of the guns. This is pretty sad. So, I mean, aside from that, you didn't really hear the other candidates really chime in a big sort of policy way. I do feel like most of the debate, or a lot of the debate, was centered around healthcare, and not there was a little talk about, you know, student debt and things of that nature, but healthcare for me, for some reason, really seemed to dominate a lot of the conversation. At least that's what it felt like when we were in the room.
Did you find any of those conversations helpful?
Yes, I mean, I did. I did find it helpful. I mean, it's always good to go back and actually look at their actual policy positions. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it doesn't really change people's minds on anyone. I mean, I think people are hearing what they want to hear. They like the folks they want to like. And as I was listening to people sitting around
people
us.
People hearing what they want to hear. Do you think that the format that we use for these presidential debates kind of emphasizes that it's easier to hear what you want to hear?
Yeah, I do think it just sort of echoes what you're already believing. It doesn't really allow for, it's a very controlled environment where the moderator is sort of, this person gets to speak and then that person gets to speak, rather than just sort of letting them sort of fight it out like a cage match, right?
Yeah. If you hear something you don't like, it's only 45 seconds, then it goes away.
Yeah. So you're not really getting to hear like the full argument, right? Yeah. So like if I disagree with something and someone says, okay, well, here's this perspective, I disagree with it, and they have 45 seconds to convince me, it's, you know, it's not a very much enough time for them to really create a what I think would be a good substantial argument to make me kind of even maybe take a step back on my belief, right? Mm-hmm. In that 45 seconds, you're really only being able to articulate what your position is on that particular issue and not really try to convince someone otherwise, per se. I mean, you saw a little bit of that kind of debate on the Medicare for All when you're talking about the cost of it and et cetera, but it it doesn't really allow for like what I would consider to be like a very persuasive argument. So there's not a lot of time for persuasion. It's just a lot of fact-based and not allows to really for the narrative to be, you know, sort of one of persuasion, I feel. So going now back to the Cosmopol, the last sort of little tidbit that was given was that 16% of the readerships have had lost someone to gun violence. And I thought that was an interesting statistic because, you know, clearly the mass shootings and the support of removal of AR-15s, which was 73% according to their poll, it's such a large number. But yet only 16% have lost someone to gun violence. So I thought that was an interesting sort of gap where you see young people really, you know, in tune to gun violence, even though they themselves may have not been a victims of it. And
16% is still too many people.
Yeah. No, I'm not suggesting that it's too low. I'm just suggesting that it's different. You know, it's not like higher than I would kind of expect it to be higher when there's so much support against gun.
And that's people that have been directly affected.
Yeah.
So even just seeing it in the news.
Right. Well, yeah. And so that's part of it too, right? Yeah. The media covering it. But it was interesting because during the debate, I want to say it was Beto, he asked everyone in the audience to raise their hand if they had been a victim of gun violence or knew someone or had been directly affected by gun violence. And I found myself raising my hand and we sort of looked around the room and sort of that realization that so many people have been affected by gun violence and this really call to action to have politicians do something about it.
So all these things coming together, do you think that these televised debates are helpful?
I'm going to be solidly in the camp of yes. And you're going to say, what?
Well, I was going to ask why.
Well, you know, I think for one, it's getting America and everyone in the space that this is actually happening, right? I mean, there's so much that goes on in our lives. It's like, for me, at least the media coverage of it, maybe not the individual candidates themselves.
I get what you're saying. But I think it's
like,
when you...
Yeah, it's like, hello, there's an election going on.
March
right?
seems so far away, but... I mean, for all of you out there who have been to our office, you know, I keep a countdown in our main room of how many days until Election Day. We are 161 days out, I believe the board says today, until like Election Night. Not even until early voting, until Election Night. And that's not a lot of time.
Yeah, and that's the Democratic primary. Yeah. So we have 160, give or take, days to decide who we're going to be voting on to be the nominee of the Democratic Party presidential nominee rather. And so it's I think these debates are helpful in sort of getting us in that space because our lives are busy, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, it doesn't give us all the answers and I wouldn't expect that it would. The hard part now is, you know, where do you go to for information? So, you know, as you know, I'm a professional focus group moderator, so I get to travel around the country and I get to moderate focus groups on primarily on politics. And when I always ask someone, you know, about a certain candidate, they'll say something like, oh, well, I'm going to do more research on that. So then I ask, well, how are you going to research it? What are you going to do? And you know what they're going to do?
Go to the candidate's social media page?
No, they're going to Google it. So typically they Google it. I mean, that's like 99% of the time.
Do you think these people actually go home and Google things?
Yes, they do.
They do.
I think they do because I think they're sort of left feeling like they didn't know the answer when I put them on the spot.
Like they were unprepared.
They were unprepared for school. But, you know, and which actually goes to the, you know, I think if you combine presidential debates with Google, now we have an informed electorate. but aside, you know, just the debates themselves by them, the debates by themselves, I don't think, you know, carry us across the finish line, but at least it gets people and young people in the space. It gets media talking about it. And most importantly, it gives us fodder for Twitter and memes and everything else because of the gaffes that the candidates make during the debate. So at the very least, it gives us a little bit of humor as well and gets to see, you know, and we get to see how the candidates react when they do gaffe. And all times, I think that the way politicians or candidates react when they make a mistake can tell you a lot about how they are going to be as leaders. So in a way, going back to your question, I do think that they are important. It may not at the end of the day take us across the finish line with respect to which candidate we're going to go with, but it gets our minds in the space. I guess, you know, people like us, you, me, everyone's listening mm-hmm. to this podcast are hyper political. So we're always yeah. paying attention, but you know, we're kind of weird in that way. Whereas most people aren't thinking about politics 24/7. They're not in that space. And, you know, they only know the names that they know based on, you know, who was previously elected. They know who Biden is because yeah. he was a former vice president, but they're not going to know the 20 some odd candidates that were up on the stage 20 a few weeks ago, much less the 10 candidates were up on stage last week. So I think it helps sort of give attention, get people in the space to begin thinking about making a decision that's extremely important when it comes to American politics.
So that wraps up this week of Viva Politics Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod, and you can find us on Twitter at Viva Politics. If you have a topic or idea you want us to talk about, send us a DM.
And I seriously recommend you go check out that Cosmopolitan Voter Guide, if anything, to look at the most favored tweets. I kind of got a kick out of them. They were pretty cool. And I think it actually showed a little bit a part of the candidates that I actually hadn't seen before. It was kind of cool. We'll see you next time.
Bye.